Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 79 of Heavy Pod. It's Heavy Cast, and this week we reach rock bottom. I think we will. I think we'll do a great job. Eden is away this week yet again, and we will discuss why he's away. I'll come up with a good story to get him salty. But in the meantime, we have Colin, who is a longtime friend and writer for Heavy Blog. So, hi, Colin.
Hello, Noyan.
God damn it. This is
Sugoi.
So, we've been getting requests to discuss like comic books and stuff with Eden. I think Eden mentioned that last week in the episode. But the thing is, Eden is a normie and a pleb, and he reads like that gross Western comic book stuff,
which are garbage.
So, I figured since Eden's away anyway, we might get Colin and talk about manga and anime and stuff, since he actually understands this higher form of art. And also, like, Eden just sandbags me whenever I talk about Japanese music and Japanese art in general, so, you know, figured we could kind of get this rolling somehow. Sorry, go ahead.
I think that's a good idea.
Is it? This is really a good idea. Okay. So, I don't know where to start. So, okay, I guess we start with something that's maybe you haven't gotten a chance to listen to this yet, but last week we mentioned, I don't know if you even heard about this, Baby Metal's backing band actually released an EP. The guys in Baby Metal, that is, like, you know, they're super talented musicians in their own right. Like,
yeah.
So they released an EP under the name Kari Band, and there's some sort of Japanese pun in there that I'm too lazy to explain. But, so it's actually very unlike Baby Metal. It's kind of funky jazz, I guess. Like, you know, the typical Japanese jazz that is pretty prominent in Japan. Yeah, you haven't gotten a chance to listen to that, I guess?
No, I have not. I know of them, but I didn't know about this new EP. What's the...
Yeah, just... It has a really dumb name, too, but the band name is Kari Band, K-A-R-I, band. And the EP name is, like... I forgot this.
Kari Ongen?
Maybe
April 26th. So yeah, this is it.
Okay. So yeah, so it's really cool. But yeah, it's if you go there expecting something like Baby Metal, it's not like that. But you know, given that these dudes in the band are all like jazz / shred musicians in their own right, it's kind of them doing their thing, and it's pretty neat.
There's a track called Gentleman.
Oh yes, there is. Yeah, the track names are dumb too.
They should start Baby Jazz, so we can push that on Nick.
Oh my god. Okay. So that's all I've got. I'm sorry, I'm just off my rocker today, I guess. I've had a rough week. So I guess tell us a little bit about yourself, I guess, Colin, for the listeners who have no idea who you are, and like how you got to be here and what you're into and whatnot, and then we'll pick it up from there.
Jimmy was drunk, and I dared him to I said, I bet you won't add me to the Heavy Blog staff group, and he did.
I remember that.
And it all, oh god, that was like 2013 maybe, and it all kind of spiraled out of control from there. I haven't been right. I've been away from the blog for about 4 or 5 months now, dealing with some personal stuff, but I definitely want to write for you guys again. It's
not you guys, it's us guys.
Come on. Well, okay, true.
You've been in the family, air quotes, longer than most people have at this point.
Yes, that is true.
Fuck, I just opened the agenda doc to see if there's anything left to talk about, and I saw the fucking wrong 12 fuck with thing. God damn it. Why is this thing still so funny to me? Okay,
fuck with basketball jerseys. people, like, unironically think that's, like, cool and badass.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the kind of... There's a segment of the hardcore audience and such, the grindcore audience, that is like, yeah, bro, we're badass. Wrong one to fuck with. Yeah.
It's just so, like, they've always, Dying Fetus have always kind of had that aesthetic going on. Like, their last album didn't have a lot of that in the cover art, but the one before that, Your Treachery Dies, the one with Your Treachery Dies With You on it.
Yeah. I can't. This story, no. The album names are dead, whatever.
But the art has always been like,
MS Paint level's bad.
I feel like it was, on at least some level, it's intentionally stupid.
Yeah. I mean, their breakout song is Kill Your Mother, Rape Your Dog.
Yeah. But it doesn't feel like it's as sincere as a lot of, like, underground slam bands.
Yeah. It's kind of like they take themselves ironically too seriously, but it's also like the line is kind of a very thin line that they're walking.
Yeah, very. It's something I can laugh at, but I don't know if it's something I can appreciate.
Yeah, and their music is cool, and thankfully it's impossible to understand the lyrics for the most part because of their vocal style. But yeah, I don't know, wrong 12, fuck with, man. So, okay, now that we've covered that, I don't know why we covered that again, but it's consistently hilarious to me. So, talking about Japanese stuff, I've kind of been cut off from news from the Japanese music scene for a while. I mean, we kind of have the super isolationist practices of Japanese music industry to kind of thank for that. And I guess let me talk about that a little bit because the listener might not be aware, but like to give you a kind of general sense, you know, J-pop, Japanese pop, has been around for quite a long time and K-pop is a relatively new player in the scene. However, at this point, K-pop is immensely more popular than J-pop. And I don't think that's necessarily because either genre is better. The thing is, Japanese labels have pretty old school attitudes towards copyright, and they very aggressively enforce their copyright outside of Japan. So if you go to YouTube and try to find official videos for J-pop artists, or even J-rock and J-metal artists, you can't find them because they always strike them down, and they refuse to distribute their music outside of Japan. Whereas if you look at K-pop, they try very hard to market their material outside of Korea because they realize that there's more people outside of Korea than inside, and there's money on the table to be made. Whereas Japanese labels, due to their kind of more traditional line of thinking, they kind of keep their stuff to themselves, and they're like, "This, we make this for Japan, and no one else gets to listen to it." So as a result of all this, and I don't know if you have anything to add there before I move on.
I remember the first time I went looking for K-pop on YouTube, I was shocked that there were, like, official channels that regularly upload.
Yeah.
It's about, like, accessibility to, like, for Japanese music, there's a whole market outside of Japan, especially in Asia, that just cannot access it. At least not easily because of the corporate culture. Like every time I've wanted to buy like a Fear and Loathing CD or Maximum the Hormones, their music isn't available to stream or to download. Mm-hmm. You have to import a CD that's the whole reason I created an Amazon Japan account. Was to pre-order Maximum the Hormone record because that's the only way to do it.
Yeah, and like when I saw Maximum the Hormone in New York, because they have a really big following here, and when they came to play here in New York, they were like, "We don't understand how we sold out the Best Buy theater in the middle of NYC because our records are not sold here," which is like fucking stupid. Like, there's literally money on the table that is being left there because of the kind of mentality of that. The Japanese corporate culture. It's just bizarre, and it's literally just hurting themselves. But anyway, as a result of this, unless some labels get really smart, like Baby Metal, for example, they are being really smart with how they market their band outside of Japan. It's really hard to keep track of the stuff because, I mean, Japan has its own social media, like they have their own streaming sites. So, and a lot of the times these sites are also geo-locked, so you can't access them outside of Japan unless you like make a big effort. So it's hard to keep up with these bands. Like I usually, when I find out that there's a new Fear and Loathing album, it's not because I was like, you know, notified through any official channels. It's that every, you know, 6 months I go check and do some digging to find out if they release something new and then try to figure out how I can get it. And that's how it works. There's no like distribution channel. And that seems really silly to me because like, if you look at how popular Japanese culture is here in America, there's conventions, anime conventions all over the place. And these people oftentimes are interested in the music that comes along with that anime as well. So they're literally just customers that want to pay. And a lot of importers import the products from Japan and then sell them with exorbitant prices to people who go to these cons or online. And that's just ridiculous. Like that money is money that the companies could have been making. And the same thing is with anime. Like only in the last few years, the anime industry realized that, oh, wait, the West exists and they want to watch anime. Maybe we should sell anime to them. And then Crunchyroll and Funimation streaming happens. Like,
Funimation is just now starting to reissue older series on Blu-ray. Like I first watched Gundam Wing and 8th MS Team on Toonami like
decades ago,
15 years ago, probably. And and just this year, they're getting a Blu-ray release in America.
Evangelion, one of the best, most important anime of all time. There is no way to legally stream it right now. And yep. The only way to buy it is buying the out-of-print DVD sets.
For hundreds like of dollars.
Hundreds of dollars. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, everybody who's into anime wants to watch Evangelion. Like, almost everyone. This is universal because it's, like, incredibly famous and a game changer for the format. But you just can't. And you have to go to piracy as a result. Like, so they're literally just leaving, not only are they leaving money on the table, they're like throwing the table out with all the money on the table. Like, what? It's just bizarre to me. Like, and the thing is, it's not like these companies are stupid and they don't understand the demand and merchandising. Like, if you go to Japan, there's merchandising up the ass everywhere. And like, just a few years ago, there was a
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure face mask.
God damn it. Just a few years ago, we'll get to that in a second. Just a few years ago, there was a Gurren Lagann like anniversary box set that was like $250, but obviously only you could get it in Japan.
I almost and, like, imported that.
Yeah, me too. And like, I'm sure many people would have bought it if that was available here. That's just fucking baffling to me. I really am upset with this.
It's
I'm
like
glad
Nintendo,
that-
but with even less effort.
Yeah, at least Nintendo still, like, market and release their games here. And I was gonna get that. Like, gaming companies have come around on this pretty well. Like, especially in the last, like, 4 or 5 years, the medium-tier Japanese game companies like XSEED, NIS America, Atlas, they realized that, oh, wait, Americans buy our games. Maybe we should kind of sell those to them. And, like, they don't even have to make the effort to do a voice track for them. Just translate the text track, and people are happy with that because like people actually like that stuff being in Japanese, and we'll get to dubbing as well at some point, I think. But like, there's demand, so why not meet that demand? It's just money to be made, and the effort to bring it over is just minimal.
I'm actually really surprised at the effort companies are putting in localizing like the Gundam Versus is a 2v2 fighting game that has a small but very dedicated community over here.
Yeah.
And previously you had to import the Japanese version with, you know, everything that goes along with that. A PS3 game, it would be like $80 to import.
Yeah.
But they're actually localizing the new PS4 one, which is just shocking to me.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. Like, once they do this and they put like a minimal amount of effort into the marketing, And they don't even have to, like, market these really hard because the audience, like, it markets itself because the audience knows it's there. Like, Gundam, you don't need to market Gundam. When there's a new Gundam game, I mean, you do, but you don't need to put in a lot of effort into marketing because the audience that already knows about it is going to buy it anyway. And, like, the Neptunia games, for example, those games aren't, like, they're not great games. They're pretty fun for their own right, but, like, they're not amazing games. And they're pretty low effort to localize, and, like, the localizers clearly have a lot of fun with, like, putting all those jokes and memes in the dialogue. It's funny.
Half the value of those games is the localization, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, up until a few years ago, these games wouldn't have come and wouldn't have gotten localized, but now they are localized. And, like, it's pretty, well, I don't want to say popular per se, but they're, like, within their own niche, they do well. Like, so my story of this is the Yakuza series. The Yakuza series is one of my favorite video game series of all time. They're fucking amazing. If you haven't played any of them, you should. They're just incredible. And, like, these games so the first one, back in the days, PS2 days, was actually localized and dubbed. And
with fucking Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill, yeah. But the dub is fucking terrible. Like, Mark Hamill is great, but, like,
he's playing
work.
The Joker, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Was he Majima?
Yes, he was.
God damn it. So, and then the second one, they just didn't bother localizing audio-wise. They didn't dub it. They just text translated, and it's sold. And then, like, for a while, 3 didn't sell that well. 4, they didn't really market those. But, like, thanks to stuff like the Super Best Friends cast kind of really pushing those games, now there's a growing audience for these games in the West. And for the longest time, Yakuza 5 didn't get localized. It came out in, I think, 2011.
Digital only, yep, for the PS3.
Yeah, well, it came out in Japan in 2011.
Oh, right.
Or 10. And I bought it in Japan, in Japanese. And, like, I played through a lot of it, but because, like, you know, the game is mostly text-based, so you can get a lot of that stuff. And for the conversations, you can kind of read them, right, in terms of the tone and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So, and there was a lot of demand for it to get localized. And finally, in 2015, they localized it, like, digital only. And then they're like, eh, cool. But now, like, Zero on PS4, Yakuza Zero, is, like, a pretty decent success, I think. Like, it's popular. It has a physical release and everybody's talking positively about it. People who know about it, that is. And, like, the demand for the series is growing. And, like, again, it's not a massive amount of... Well, it's still... There's a lot of text in the game. It's effort to localize. But if you're not doing a voice track, it's not that big of a undertaking. And, like, there is the audience here. So, you know. And for some games, like, you don't even have to do a lot of localization. Like, sure, text-heavy games like Yakuza, maybe. But, I don't know, something like... Nothing is coming to my mind right now. Like Dynasty Warriors, for example. Like, whatever, you know? The games are pretty similar to each other. You localize them once and then reuse a lot of the assets, and that's it. And that series is mildly popular, too. So, yeah, it all comes back to it being, you know, companies need to realize there's demand for these things here.
Do you think there's any chance the success of the Japanese game industry... and some of the anime industry breaking out into the U.S. market will inform or bleed over into the music?
I think the Japanese music industry is a really weird thing. Like, first of all, it's tied to their idol culture, which is, like, for the unfamiliar listener, idol culture is really weird. They have these people who are, like, not necessarily even good at singing, but they're, like, good at being personalities. And these people have bands, like, AKB48 is obviously the most famous one. Arashi is another one. That's a male band that's been around for a pretty long time. These people just go on talk shows. They sometimes act in TV shows and they're fucking terrible. They play a lot of concerts and the concerts are, like, lip-synced and they just go on stage and dance and people lose their shit. They do a lot of public signing. Like, they're just public figures, right? They don't really have anything that they're particularly known for.
Looking good.
Yeah, looking cute. And, like, they bring a lot of money to the labels. And that is a huge part of the Japanese
And that would translate it all to the West. Yeah.
Because, like, you need to watch the variety shows that they're part of and, you know, all that stuff. But, that being said, the K-pop has this too. And K-pop, despite that, still can isolate the music component and sell it to the West, and that works. So, I think that could work. That being said, the Japanese corporations that, you know, control all of this are very kind of set in their ways. And I think it's more a matter of, for attitudes to change in Japanese companies, basically, like, the old generation has to retire or pass away. Like, that's just kind of how it goes. And I would say there's this amazing Japanese TV show called Hanzawa Naoki, which is about this guy who was a banker who works in this company. It's all about the Japanese corporate culture. It's an incredible show. I would recommend that the listener watch it, but they can't because it's not distributed here.
Yeah. Go watch Terrace House instead. It's ridiculous.
Terrace House is like a reality show. It's on Netflix. And it's kind of like Big Brother, or what's the American equivalent of Big Brother?
Jersey Shore? I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway, yeah, these people go and live in a house and they kind of build relationships. But unlike the American or Western versions of these shows, there's just no bickering whatsoever. They're just incredibly mature about everything. They're very calm and polite, and they resolve their conflicts through talking to each other. And it's amazing. Like, it's so zen in
a
way.
It also has the very Japanese thing of there's people that are watching, like, media personalities.
Oh, yeah.
They're watching the show with you and will commentate on it. And
yeah, like every, like, two or three times an episode, the camera will cut back to the commentators and they will, like, make jokes about it and, like, comment. And that's very, like, you know, typical of Japanese variety shows. In fact, that one's, like, pretty toned down because normally you get, like, more of the personalities and picture in picture their faces reacting
super
to what's
loud,
going on.
Picture in picture memes, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, you can, Gaki no Tsukai is a pretty famous Japanese game show, and like, you can find it online. There's a subreddit called, I think it's Japanese Game Shows. You can go and, like, check out streaming versions of those there. And, like, it's just an entirely different culture. It's amazing. And they created the reaction video, like, decades before YouTube existed.
Oh, yeah. It's like, what's that game show that has, like, they dress up the guys in diapers and have them, like, do, like...
Ah, oh, God. Fuck, I forget that. Yeah. No, but, like, if you go to the Japanese game show subreddit and, like, sort it by all-time top, you can find it, and it's amazing. So, actually, when I was in Japan, the first time I was in Japan, it was Christmas, and they had this, like, Christmas special show, and Gackt was on it, obviously. So, Colin knows what I'm talking about, but for the uninitiated, Gackt is a male Japanese idol, and, like, he's the super larger-than-life personality, like, you know, very tan skin, bleached hair, always wears sunglasses, and, like, he's, like, a huge asshole, and, like, but whatever he wants to get done, gets done, because, like, he's one of the biggest figures in there. And, like, Gackt was on it, Arashi was on it, and, like, it was just, like, they're playing these mundane-ass, like, game show games, and they're all super fucking terrible at it. And, like, it's... Oh, my God. I remember this game where it's, like, they set out around this round table, and there was this thing that, like, rotated, and it was kind of like Jenga, right? And they...
Oh, God,
they
I've to, seen this. Yes, this is great.
They're all just so fucking terrible at it. I don't understand how... humans can be so terrible at, like, basic tasks like this. But they're just so bad, and they're, like, part of it is, like, especially this goes for the female idols, they have this, like, clumsy persona, so, like, oh, I'm sorry, I toppled the thing. Yeah, it's, like, it's fucking terrible, but, like, it's, like, you kind of get mesmerized, and you can't not watch. It's just something else.
Yeah, I think that's part of the hook, is the kind of like a slow down to watch a car, look at a car wreck kind of thing.
Yep. Okay. I think that's enough on Japanese game shows. So I guess we mentioned kind of subbing and dubbing. And this is kind of a controversial topic, I guess, if you follow any sort of Japanese medium, be it games or anime. But there's the matter of localization in terms of keeping the honorifics. And I don't know why we're fucking talking about this on the podcast, but if you're listening already, you just sucked in. So anyway, there's the two big debates, right? There's the first subbing versus dubbing, and then there's also keeping honorifics and other Japanese cultural artifacts in the translation. So me being a weeaboo and kind of being actually familiar with Japanese culture, and now I sound like an asshole. Okay. Anyway, so on the matter of honorifics, so if the listener is somehow unaware, Japanese language is kind of a language that, since the society is very based on respect and honor and stuff like that, they have these things called honorifics at the end of the sentence that kind of, when someone speaks, you know, I would call you Colin-san or Colin-chan or Colin-kun or something like that. And those kind of denote how I show, what level of respect or intimacy I show towards you, right? And so early anime dubbing, anime fan subbing, which is basically the practice of fans adding translations to anime and then releasing it online for people to watch, which is how anime got to where it is today. Crunchyroll used to be a pirate and fan translation site that got legit and got big. And this made anime get big in the West because that's how we got all these conventions and whatnot. Anyway, earlier fan translations, for whatever reasons, decided to use honorifics in their translations. So, you know, the conversations, you need to understand a little bit about the basics of honorifics to kind of appreciate what's going on in these situations. And, but it also gives you a better insight into the relationships of the characters and other such kind of Japanese-isms in the translations. But more professional translations, translations for normies, if you will, kind of don't do that. Like, if you watch professionally translated Japanese movies at the theater, they will not use these, and they will kind of sound evergreen and languageless. And some people say that is better translation because that is more formal translation. But it also kind of, to me, especially for niche fans of Japanese stuff, kind of erases some of the cultural context that you find within that. Because, you know, it kind of whitewashes it, I guess, in a sense. You know, it takes away the quirks and inherent cultural baggage of the language. And I'm not a fan of that. And I know that the translations that keep in honorifics have a higher barrier to entry because it requires the listener to kind of understand some background knowledge. But beyond that, I think it is more respectful towards the culture, even though it's not necessarily the more professional way to do it. How do you feel about this?
I agree. I think that if you're consuming a culture's media or art, not that the two are mutually exclusive, I think you should put some effort into understanding the context it was created in and the cultural ideas and themes within it. If you want to just I can understand the perspective of someone who just wants to sit down and watch something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not everyone is going to be a, nerd about anime and, understand all of these things. And I understand that it would look off-putting to them. So maybe having two options would be nice. Sometimes you have, when you're watching something, say, on Netflix, you could get the subtitles or the closed caption subtitles, which also, describe the music and voice effects, sound effects, right?
Yep.
So kind of like that, you could have the, the clean translation and I can't find a non-loaded word, but the plain translation and the cultural translation, I guess.
The thing with the basic goal of translating, especially mm-hmm. something so loaded with cultural context, is to produce something that's both readable, but also something that also respects the cultural context
and conveys the intent of the original.
Yes, that's a big problem with a lot of early Japanese video games was the translation.
They were just not really understandable. Like, they were too far in the directly translated from Japanese realm of things.
Just straight literal translation doesn't work, because Japanese isn't English, obviously. And it's, as a language, it's very dependent on these cultural customs and traditions.
Yeah.
Such as honorifics. And I think those, I mean, even if you don't preserve them in the text, it's still, you can still usually hear them in the dialogue.
Yeah, sometimes. Like, I mean, depends on the context. And also, if you're translating something that heavily relies on Japanese culture versus something where the culture is kind of not super central. And I guess an example, and going back to video games, I love the Ace Attorney Phoenix Wright games, right? And those games take place in Japan and like some have a legal system loosely based on Japan's legal system and have cases that obviously take place in Japan. But for the first game, they opted for a professional translation. So they set the game series in California, gave all of the characters American names, and like jokes and puns based on those. And the first game was kind of not super culturally placed anywhere, but over the course of the series, they got more and more Japanese. Like, the Japanese roots of the series came through more and more.
Like, having Japanese buildings, but still the characters are saying they're going to go out for a hamburger.
Yeah, like, no, it's more like they are ordering, like, super Japanese food, like rice balls and sushi and, like, dishes that we don't have here. Like, we have rice balls and sushi, but we don't have, like, natto, for example. And, like, and jokes based on those, right? And then that gets to the point where it kind of became a meme within the fan base to, like, make, like, that the series takes place obviously in Japan, but they're talking, like, oh, we're in California. Look outside the window. You can see the beaches, and it's just no. And then in the latest game, Spirit of Justice, which is the sixth main game in the series, there's a case that takes place, like a murder trial that happens during a Rakugo, performance. And Rakugo is a traditional Japanese theater. Like, there's more to it than that, but I don't want to go super in-depth about what Rakugo is. You can look it up if you care.
Well, and they just happened to be watching that in California.
More so, like, there's all the characters in the play are, like, different levels of Rakugo apprenticeships, and, like, they're talking about the intricacies of Rakugo, and there's a Japanese noodle delivery service guy who's also involved in the case. And, like, whether the noodles are, like, buckwheat noodles or, like, other types of noodles are pretty important to the case. But, like, you can't, so the problem is a Japanese person just understands all of these by default, right? Whereas a Western audience, like, if you have to translate this to a Western audience to the point that you make it easy for them to understand, it just loses everything, because the entirety of the work there is based on intricacies of Japanese culture. And it's by far the worst case out of all the games, of all the cases in the series, playing it in English, because, like, there's just so much exposition trying to explain these things and trying to kind of make it obvious. But the problem is, like, once you point out these unnecessary details that a Japanese person would know but an American person wouldn't know, then those details become too obvious, and obviously they're like the focus of the case, right? Like, then the case becomes like, it just doesn't work overall because of all the baggage there.
It definitely took me out of the experience.
Yeah, so there's that balance to be walked, and if you kind of pigeonhole yourself into kind of erasing all of that, then you get to a point where it just doesn't work. It's too much, because you know, as the series goes on, then you're kind of stuck in a rut there.
I think there's a point where you can say, like, this piece of work has very little to do with, like, it's a fantasy or sci-fi series.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can be a little more liberal with how you translate and localize it.
Yeah, for sure. But something that takes place in, like, urban Japan or historical Japan or, like, relies heavily on Japanese culture, you just can't.
Yeah, you have to pay attention to the cultural contexts.
And then we have the debate between subs and dubs. So, this is a pretty hotly contested topic among fans of Japanese culture in general. And that is that some people believe subtitled material with Japanese audio is better, and others believe that Japanese audio replaced with an English voice track is better. And let me try to fairly present the argument for both sides. So people who prefer dubs, they think that, I guess, they don't want to read while watching something, and they, for some reason, cannot... See how fair I'm being here. They, for some reason, cannot understand the kind of emotions being conveyed unless they're being conveyed by someone in their native language, and they get distracted by the Japanese audio and whatnot. And sometimes they think that the Japanese audio is just bad. Fans of subtitled work believe that, you know, again, believe in preserving the spirit of the original, and also believe that the American anime voice acting industry is fucking garbage, and they're, except for a few very rare cases,
it's there. I mean, it isn't good. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the voice actors all put in performances that sound very similar to each other,
mm-hmm.
and very childish, I guess.
Yeah, and kind of phoned in at times.
But, like, the actual dubbing industry does, they put in effort, just not a lot. Not enough.
And also,
compared to the effort put in by the Japanese voice actors, there's a scene in a Studio Trigger show recently, mm-hmm. where Hayama Saori recorded this really amazing scene,
mm-hmm.
in one take, and it's some of the best voice acting I've heard in a show ever.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it feels so natural.
So let me try to break this down a little bit, because one argument that dub fans use, that actually the Japanese voice acting is bad, you just can't tell it because you don't know Japanese, which I don't really agree with, but let me try to present the art, since I am a fan of subs, let me try to present the argument for this side. And it's not that the American dubbing industry is 100% garbage, but there is, the top talent is rarely used, I guess, in that, like, when everything aligns just right, they can do a really good job, but otherwise it just doesn't have the same coherence. Because the thing is, well, first of all, American anime voice acting generally tries to sound like this, which just doesn't work.
Actually really spot on.
that's just not how people talk. And I guess they're trying to imitate the intensity of Japanese speech, but that's just how Japanese sounds, and that's just, again, cultural context. But the reason the Japanese stuff is often better, in my opinion, is that A, their voice acting industry, like, is huge and, like, very prolific. And also, they get to work with the original creators. That's the real key here.
Yeah.
Like, they get to work with the actual director, and the director picks the people who he or she wants, and they pick how the lines are delivered. They tell people to redo it, that, you know, that this didn't work, do it again. Whereas in the translation scene, they they don't have that access to the original material, original creator. They're just doing a good enough job. And whomever is the director of the translation is, you know.
Voice acting, directing is so important.
Yes.
Especially when you, I, as someone who grew up watching dubs and dubbed anime.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it well enough, and I thought I even thought some of it was good. But most of the time, in the back of my mind, it was like, this is really bad. Especially when the dub kept honorifics, but the voice actor didn't know how to properly pronounce a name with honorifics. Or they kept a Japanese name, and the English voice actor didn't know how to properly pronounce the Japanese name. It was...
What's worse is when they pronounce the name differently every time because they can't nail the pronunciation. That happens so often.
That is the quickest and sharpest way to pull me out of an experience.
Yeah. And so I was going to say something. What was I going to say? Okay, I forgot my point.
The voice direction.
Voice direction. Yes.
They get to work with the original creators.
I can't believe how I just totally fucking forgot this. No, I mean, even being, like, obviously I grew up in Turkey, and I had to watch material that is not in the language of the country I live in, right? So, and, like, they would dub American movies into Turkish, and it would always be fucking terrible and incredibly awkward. And I would always prefer to watch things with subtitles, because it just fits better. Like, you get an understanding of tone and context, which the translators just do not convey. And for example, the reason why the Dark Souls series has such good English voice acting is because the original creator actually works with a studio that makes does the voice acting in English, and the games are originally voice acted in English. That's why it's good. And same with, for example, Metal Gear, again another series that is Japanese in origin, but has really good English voice acting. It's because the creators engage with the translation teams. And that is super important. Like you said, voice acting, directing is just something else. I'm super upset that I can't remember my train of thought now. God damn it.
When there's that degree of separation between the original process of creation and the localization and dubbing, there, it's more than just something being lost in translation. It feels like it was Americanized, but without any input. And I'll admit, since, like, Funimation has been really big on dubs. Like, they obviously, everything they offer is still subbed, and it probably always will be, but they do actually work with the original Japanese creators as best they can now when they do their dubs.
Yeah, and that's super important.
It's a lot better. It's still not to the point where I'd want to watch it as a first option. But that's just my personal preference. It's a lot better than it was in the 90s.
I remembered my point, by the way. My point is that, and I kind of discussed this with you offline previously, but America doesn't respect animation in general. If you think about it, there is zero animation that has come out in a very long time that is either not aimed at children or not humorous. All of the popular animation is either aimed at children or humorous. And this devalues animation as a format, because then it's perceived as something that is for kids. Even if it's not only for kids, it cannot exclude the child audience. So as such, whenever new animation comes out, it has to include either humor or target kids to be successful, because people think the format is for kids and it's not a serious format. And as a result, I think, this also affects the anime voice acting industry here, because, again, it's geared towards a younger audience in that case. And a lot of anime, well, not a, there, a significant amount of anime is not aimed at children. It has serious subject matter and is dramatic and is not humorous. And when you try to translate that stuff, but do not portray the gravitas necessary for that context, then it ends up having those like yelly lines of like I imitated earlier. And that happens here in America in children's cartoons because, you know, that's how it is. But if you look at video games, for example, like video games don't have that type of voice acting. Because again, like video games are understood to be not just for children. Like if you look at someone like Nolan North or Troy Baker, these are great voice actors, but they don't do the anime voice that is people speaking like this. So because they can target their stuff at a different audience. And I think the American anime voice acting industry just needs to tap a different pool of talent and not tap people who are looking to do animation voice directing. So I think that's kind of part of the problem here.
I definitely agree with that. It's
so
it's let's, everything sorry, seems to be directed like and voice like it's aimed at kids and preteens, even when it's not.
Yeah, and it just doesn't work. It just doesn't devalues the format. So we've mentioned a few anime here and there, and I guess we're like 45 minutes in now, so let's talk about a few things that we really like, why we like them, and some recommendations, and maybe if the listeners aren't super into anime, you know, how they can get into it. And yeah, so Crunchyroll and Funimation are the best places to legally watch anime right now. Netflix has some too. And I think Amazon has a little bit too. I think Crunchyroll out of those has the biggest selection, if I'm not mistaken.
I generally like Crunchyroll's selection and the stuff they are streaming from the current season is generally better.
Yeah,
or stuff I'm more interested in my opinion.
Yeah. I think Hulu has some anime too, now that I think about it. But yeah, Crunchyroll is generally the one that keeps the pulse of the scene the best, I guess, you know.
Amazon is starting an anime streaming service, though. If you have Prime, it's only $5 more a month.
Hmm.
And they have some stuff you can't see anywhere else.
Yeah. So, I think, and this is on Crunchyroll, but I think the recent anime that we can most unanimously recommend is JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, right?
I agree.
So, this is a bizarre show, if you will. And obviously, so, again, at the risk of sounding elitist, but who cares, right? The manga is oftentimes better, the original comic that is the material is based on. But, some anime actually do a good job of, you know, adding enough value to be worthwhile. And I think JoJo is one of the few anime where I can say the animation definitely is at least as good as the manga.
Oh, right? Yeah, I agree.
So, the I don't know how to fucking describe the premise of this show. But basically, there are arcs, and each arc focuses on a separate character. And each arc is like, you know, a season of a show, basically, right? And they're all from the same lineage, and originally it starts out as in the like 1800s, and there is this family, the Joestar family, and I don't know, this is really hard trying to describe this, but basically, originally it's like there's a vampire threat back in the 1800s, and in the second season, there's some elder god threat, kind of for lack of a better description, I guess the car is kind of like an elder god. But ever since then, basically season 3 is where the show kind of hits its stride, even though I think especially the second season is amazing.
Season 2, the second arc is amazing, but 3 yeah. is, like, 3 is where people really know
yeah.
the characters and themes.
So to give you an idea of how far the influence of this reaches, there are Street Fighter characters designed after JoJo characters. Like Stroheim is the influence for Guile out of Street Fighter.
Yep.
Like it goes that far. There's like any Japanese gave me the Persona series is entirely based on the premise of JoJo post season 3. And like anything Japanese that you watch, any anime or game that you play, is probably going to have some influence from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. This series has been going since the 80s, I think, and it's still going.
Over 30 years. It's the 30-year story of a manga author discovering his sexuality.
And, like, unlike a lot of those series, it's actually retained its quality and has improved, if even. Like, anyway, so after season 3, the premise becomes that there are these mystical powers called stands, which, if you're familiar with the Persona games, they're personas. If not, these are basically kind of... Each person who has a stand has a completely unique ability. And these are usually like spirits that follow you and imitate your actions and give you like some sort of superpower. This sounds like weird, but it is.
They're manifestations of your mental abilities.
Yeah, kind of in a way. And the thing is, the reason JoJo breaks the mold for a lot of manga is that battles are not won by sheer strength. Like if you have your image of a battle manga in your head and something like Dragon Ball, where, you know, it's over 9,000 power level, 10,000 power level, now I can destroy planets. It's not like that. It's always been the case with JoJo that it's always about outsmarting your opponent and understanding their weaknesses, your strengths, and how to leverage that. That's why it's always been interesting. And the powers that the characters have are always super weird and interesting. And sorry, go ahead.
It's like the different stand abilities get progressively more and more ridiculous and incredible. And I just like to think he hasn't written himself into out of ideas at this point, and the latest part has some of the most creative stands he's ever written.
Yeah,
just. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, for sure. And so the manga itself is at the 8th arc right now, and the anime's adaptation of the 4th arc just aired, and it's amazing. Like, the thing is, the voice acting is always top-notch. The art style is incredible. It conveys the bizarre and over-the-top nature of the show very well, and the animation quality is pretty good too, and like even though sometimes it has like what it does, so anime is 15 frames a second, and it's all about how you convey motion using this low frame rate, right? And JoJo usually does an amazing job of this, and the music is amazing too.
Oh god, yeah, especially not only do they use licensed music like Pat Metheny and
Savage Garden.
Yeah, they also use original music for the show, which is great.
Mm-hmm. And they blend both of them very well. Like, each series takes place in a particular time period, and they try to get songs the one that takes place in the 1800s, they use songs that were hits in the year that the thing came out in. And that's, like, gives it a pretty... Like, it places the arc in time pretty well, which is amazing. Like, the Savage Garden song, for example, was like a big hit in that year, and it evokes the feeling of that time. And like, each arc is completely different in terms of tone. Like, the first one is kind of gothic horror. The second one, how the fuck do you describe the second arc?
The second one is kind of like an Indiana Jones movie with superpowered
villains.
Yeah.
And the third one is basically, you know, a trek across Egypt while battling.
The third one is like a world road trip while battling a series of other stand users. And then once they get to Egypt, it switches a bit.
Yeah.
Because they're not moving around so much, and they still have to deal with enemy stand users, but it's more localized and what's the word I'm looking for?
contained?
Yeah, it's a bit more contained once they actually get to Egypt.
And the fourth series is basically Twin Peaks.
Yeah, it basically is.
It's amazing. Like, this tonal shift is just amazing. And the fifth series, how the fuck do I even describe the fifth series?
The fifth series is Italian kid who gets one of the most powerful stands in the entire series and decides,
and joins the mob.
And decides, I want to start my own gang. Will be the height of his ambitions.
And the sixth series is a prison break. And the seventh series is the great race across America, like the horse race.
Yeah, it's called Steel Ball Run, which is very obviously a riff on Cannonball Run.
Yeah.
I think either series 6 or series 3 are tied for my favorites.
Huh. Series 5 is probably 5 and 7 are my favorites.
5 is really good. I love 5.
So the thing about the stands is that since the abilities are so fucking off the wall, and like the range of abilities goes from like stopping time, which is like a pretty over the top ability,
to negating causality.
Negating causality, making like I'm trying to think of the more bizarre stands. I'm totally blanking now. Being able to write someone's fate into their face. Being able to make sound effects real.
There in the latest one, there is a road. The stand is the road, and it's called Shakedown Road.
Oh, yeah. Fucking. There's one where your guilt literally weighs on you physically.
Like, oh, yeah.
There are, like, all these different abilities, and, the thing is, when the characters encounter a new enemy, they have absolutely no fucking idea what the enemy stand user's power is, and they try to figure out what's going on. Like, oftentimes they don't even know where the attack is coming from, right? They first need to, like, assess the situation, look at their environment, and try to discover what the enemy ability is. And then once the enemy ability has been revealed, like, it's usually something that is super weird and hard to defeat, and then they have to kind of use their collective abilities to kind of gain the upper hand. And like, it's just every encounter is so cleverly written, and also like has just the right amount of humor, just the right amount of levity, and is also very like, well, bizarre in its tonality, and it just works so well.
One of the most memorable ones is when they're crossing the Sahara in part 3 and the sun gets super hot and starts, like, it literally melts. It kills their camels, I think, because it's so hot. And they eventually figure out the sun is the stand, but they don't know where the user is. And they hide behind this pile of rocks in the shade until they figure out that...
Oh, yeah.
The guy is hiding in a small enclosure that is a mirror... covered by a mirror image of the desert across from it. And it's just this guy sitting in an enclosure with air conditioning eating junk food.
Yep. I really love Crazy Diamond, the main character stand from part 4, where its ability is to fix things, and that's by punching them. And that sounds lame. But
the first time someone showed me a panel from part 4 out of context, and I didn't know that he fixed things while punching them, and it's a photo of him punching his mom. And I'm like, what the fuck is this?
And like, the things he does with that are like super amazing and creative, because like, then you have stuff like you kind of break off a person, like you get a tear from someone's clothing and then you punch it. And then it will follow itself back to the original clothing, so you can follow the person, like, without knowing where they are and stuff like that. Like, it's just incredibly clever. So, okay, I think that's enough on JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. It's an amazing series, really, really great. And also, like, the anime production is incredible as well. And it's on Crunchyroll, so you can go watch it there.
There is a lot of it. Like, yeah. Part 3 alone is like 26 episodes just for that.
Yeah. And I think the part 1 is kind of a bit of a slow start, but I think it's still worth watching. And like, then part 2 and onwards is just a wild ride. It's amazing.
I like part one well enough, but as someone who like has already read and is mostly current with the manga, like going back and watching part one again, knowing it all was a bit of a slog for me.
Well, but interestingly, like part one is also the most improved in the anime out of all the parts. Like they've basically made it pace a lot better.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, but even still, I think it's still worth watching. It's still pretty cool.
Part one has a lot of memes, like how many breads have you been eating? Or it was me, Dio.
Oh my god! Yeah. Okay. So, what's your all-time favorite end?
Oof. Probably a toss-up between the super normie answer of Evangelion and Eureka 7.
Okay, Eureka 7 is interesting. So, talk to me about that. I mean, Evangelion. I think, like, it's hard to talk about Evangelion because, like, it's Evangelion.
And it's a very loaded subject because, like, it is. You can't talk about anime without talking about Evangelion, but talking about Evangelion eventually devolves into complete shitposting.
Yep. And also, you can't watch it, so, you know. You can. Eureka 7, is that on Funimation or something?
It is on Funimation. They have Blu-ray releases out that are very reasonably priced.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like $30 for each season. It's Eureka 7 is a coming-of-age story, two love stories, an alien invasion story, and a rebellion story. All at once.
Yeah.
And it has an amazing funk soundtrack. Like Japanese funk rock.
Oh, apparently is it originally an anime that then caught its manga?
Yes.
I think it is.
Yes, it is.
That is always a rarity.
The manga actually diverges from the anime.
That's funny, because usually it's that the manga comes out first, and the anime kind of catches up to the manga, but still has room to go, so it kind of diverges, but
yep.
The other way, it's weird.
It is, the animation is incredible, and the world and setting is, I don't think I've seen anything like it in another piece of media. It takes place on what is ostensibly Earth, but it's been overrun by a coral-like alien invasion.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the remaining population lives relatively peacefully, but they're still afraid of the aliens who've terraformed a large amount of the planet into these huge coral structures.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they can't communicate with them. They have no idea what their intentions are. So it ends with them. Any interaction usually ends with them killing each other.
Yeah.
And so because such large swaths of the planet are inaccessible, a lot of humanity have taken to the sky. And they have large airships, and not like steampunk airships. Like,
do the airships also turn into little girls?
No, not this time. Unfortunately, there are some mechs that are piloted by little girls. The secondary love story involves basically a test. This girl who's a military science experiment. To be like the perfect mech pilot, but it's also turns her into a complete psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
And it follows her and her handler, who is a young military officer, and they're originally kind of played up to be like villains, and honestly, I expected them to die.
Mm-hmm.
But they play a much larger role in the plot than I thought they would. which is something I ended up really appreciating in that the whole show is very bittersweet and melancholic, but the ending is just really incredible, and I'm not going to spoil anything. You need to watch it. Under no circumstances should you watch Eureka 7AO, though. It is an ostensible sequel that takes a big steaming shit on everything that was amazing and beautiful about the original.
Yeah.
Seriously. That's... Just, ugh.
Anime sequels are often a crapshoot. My favorite would probably be a pretty normie answer of Death Note, just because I think it still holds up, and it's influenced so much in what I consume in media. And Death Note's, by the way, available on Netflix. I don't know if it's on Crunchy, but it is on Netflix. And, well, it's... God damn, I don't want to talk about Death Note, because I just... Like, it's too much, right?
You should take a potato chip and eat it instead.
God damn it. That fucking... Anime memes are the best. So, for the uninitiated, I guess I'll just briefly go over Death Note, which is a series about a high school kid who later goes on to university, by the way. He finds this magical notebook that, inside the notebook, once you write someone's name and picture their face in your head while doing this, they will die in, like, 40 seconds. Unless you specifically write how they will die. And he comes to possession of this, and he slowly comes to decide that he will... This is a divine responsibility that he has, and he has to cleanse the earth of crime. But obviously, this is kind of a vigilante situation on his part, and...
Very morally questionable.
Very morally questionable. And, like, at first, it begins morally questionable and then gets way worse as he kind of starts pursuing his own interests more and more. And as people start dying off mysteriously, they bring in a genius investigator to catch this killer. And it's about the cat and mouse game between these two characters. And it has the most amazing mind games ever, I would say. It's purely about mind games, the entire show. And it has just brilliant mind games that are set up so well and pay off so well. And it's just watching two characters who are just incredibly intelligent kind of try to outsmart each other is just fascinating in a way. And they have completely opposite ideologies, but also have a lot of overlap in how they think, I guess, because in essence, they both kind of want to get rid of crime, but obviously there are right and wrong ways to do it, they both think. And so this has a really good anime adaptation, but in the middle of the series, something happens, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. And so that kind of changes, and that's off-putting to a lot of watchers of the anime. And after that, the anime kind of loses some of the pacing and kind of gets a little bit weird. But at that point, I would recommend switching to the manga.
I can honestly say, I think that the pacing issues Death Note has as an anime, I think, have a lot to do with how it doesn't follow the traditional, like, structure you would expect from a series, yeah, from a character drama like that.
Yeah, and the thing is, in the second half of the series in manga form, it gets incredibly complicated, and, like, if you read the manga, they have panels with, like, a shit ton of text, right? And it's just too complicated in the manga form to adapt to anime. Like, given the format for episodes, how long episodes are, and how many episodes they had left in the season, it was just impossible to translate all of that to anime format. So it suffers from that. Like, in manga form, it's still amazing, but in the anime form, it just doesn't translate as well because they're kind of
budget and time corners. Constrained. Because, like, they would be like four seasons probably to get everything into.
Yeah.
If not more, because there's so much text and just character interaction.
Yeah. That
For a 23-minute episode, it's just impossible to squeeze it all into there.
Unless you're the Monogatari series.
Yes, that is true.
So,
That show is mostly just people talking to each other, and it's still somehow riveting.
Really, really fast, too, like constantly.
Yes, like, oh my... That is...
Okay, so, taking a step back. Monogatari is the name of a group of series, starting with Bakemonogatari, and this one is on Crunchyroll, I believe. And it's about vampires, I guess, to grossly oversimplify it. Continue.
It reminds me of another one I'd include in my favorite anime ever. It's called The Tatami Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
How readily I can actually recommend this to you, because not only is it I think it's on Funimation, but there is so much dialogue and mm-hmm. so much fast dialogue that not only relies on exclusive Japanese idioms and references, but also visual references to stuff going on in the shot, that it is a wonderful, beautiful show, but the amount of effort and energy required the viewer needs to invest in to understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
If you think that you have the amount of time and energy required to invest in something like that, I definitely would recommend it. But otherwise, I'd say start somewhere else, because it's
not a beginner's anime. It's a pretty dense show.
It's like deciding to read Finnegan's Wake as a way of learning English.
that's a pretty good analogy, I would say. So there's so much stuff for me to talk about that I just don't know where to take this, and we have limited time, obviously.
How about if you're not big into, you mentioned earlier, like, if you're not big into anime, what would be a good place to start digging deeper? Like, what series or mangas would be a good jumping off point for that?
I mean, it's kind of hard. So basically saying anime that is not like tropey as fuck and kind of like a good entry point for people who are not into that bizarre bullshit.
Yeah, let's go with that. Like, I do think, obviously, we got Eden to watch One Punch Man, and he mm-hmm. liked that. So I would definitely recommend that. And yeah, Mob Psycho 100, although yes. That's a bit weirder.
Yeah. So One Punch Man, very short synopsis here. It's basically this show about a superhero who, no matter what, can kill everything with a single punch. And it's a comedy show, because the joke is that, you know, enemies get played up, and they're like incredibly strong enemies, like world-ending catastrophe, but he just kills them in one punch. Like, it's like really stupid deadpan humor.
And he doesn't have any superpowers. He's just a guy who trains really, really hard.
Yeah, it's like absurdist humor, basically. And like, it's, the joke is how stupid and like one note it is, but then it gets played in funnier and funnier ways. And like, things get more and more complicated. But again, like, no matter how complicated anything gets, you will kill anything in one punch.
Honestly, when I started it, I didn't expect it to be able to stand on that premise and keep it up, but it does.
Yeah. I think it's because they dedicate so hard to it that it just keeps working. And also, the animation is really amazing.
Yes. And it's getting another season soon. That's on, yeah. Is that on Funimation? I think it's on Funimation.
It's on Funimation and Netflix.
Okay, yeah, definitely. That's a really good place to start, because it's funny and it's not too...
tropey.
And it's not, and it's like a lot, I, I understand a lot of people are off put by the sexualization in anime.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a cultural thing that I'm not going to go into right now.
Mm-hmm.
But One Punch Man doesn't have a lot of that.
It also doesn't have a lot of, well, it has some of the anime slapstick that stuff like Dragon Ball overuses, but it plays it in such a stupid way that it's like, it's okay. Like, it's self-aware of how stupid that stuff is.
It's kind of a, it's not a deconstruction, but it does work as a deconstruction of the, like, oh, I'm so powerful, I'm gonna blow up your planet in 20 episodes thing.
Yeah. Yeah, because, like, God damn it.
And,
yeah.
And the main, the One Punch Man, Saitama just doesn't give a shit about any of these guys.
He just wants to have, what was his catchphrase?
He just wants to have a normal life. He's no, like, isn't that,
that's Kira's catchphrase.
Oh yeah, that is Kira.
he has this ideology that he's bored. Like, he doesn't care. And he, like, no matter what happens, he just cannot find it in himself to get involved.
Oh, yeah, he's too powerful, so he doesn't...
He wants fame, I think.
Yeah, he wants an opponent who he can actually fight, but everybody he just defeats and then goes home, and it's boring.
Yeah, and the show really plays off that one note joke that it gets all the mileage you can get out of it, and it's pretty great. So I think one anime that is a pretty solid recommendation would be Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood.
Agree.
So there's two Full Metal Alchemist series. The first series is based on a manga.
I love the original series, but I will readily admit it has pacing and tonal issues.
And yeah, so they're both based on the same manga, but the thing is, when the first series was made, the manga was ongoing, so it kind of had to slow itself down, and then halfway through, kind of make up its own plot since the manga wasn't finished, whereas the second one was made after the manga was finished, so it's a complete adaptation of the original work. And I want to focus on Brotherhood, because I think overall it's better, even though the original was pretty good too. And the premise is that it takes place in this kind of steampunky fantasy,
like World War I era
Germany-ish
country. Yeah.
So, yeah, the powers of alchemy exist basically where alchemy is this kind of sort of occult magic that is based on equivalent exchange. You know, you take, but you also have to give some. Like, you have to make a sacrifice.
Equivalent exchange.
Yeah. And it's about the story of two brothers who lost their mother, and they tried to bring her back from the dead. And as a result, one of them lost his body, and he lives in this
suit of armor.
And the other one lost his arm and leg.
And they do actually succeed in bringing their mother back, but she's a horrible, deformed mass of flesh.
Yeah.
Which they eventually have to just deal with. And that's the jumping off point for the whole series. And things get progressively ramp up from there, but everything eventually kind of ties back into that first incident.
Yeah. And, you know, it immediately establishes that these things have a cost. And they're basically, you know, traveling across the land, trying to learn more alchemy to, you know, kind of undo their mistakes. And over the course of this thing, they get enveloped in this big plot that involves the military and
a secret society that wants to, get... I think it was the Philosopher's Stone that will negate equal exchange and just allow them to create matter.
Yeah. And World War II is coming up, so they're trying to, you know, whomever has the Philosopher's Stone will win the war, right? Because it creates, it lets you use magic endlessly. And there are the personifications of the seven deadly sins, and each of these are incredibly powerful individuals who are just wreaking havoc across this whole situation. And so, yeah, the tone is really good, I think. is quite serious, but with some levity at sometimes. And the characters, the main characters are young, but they're enveloped in a serious adult.
And it does get pretty dark. Like
it does get quite dark, yeah. And overall, I think, you know, the especially Brotherhood, the animation is great. The voice acting, the characters, they're all great. The plot is great. The setting, it's just a really fantastic show that does pretty much everything right. And it is definitely worth watching.
In fact, I haven't seen the Brotherhood dub is
actually good.
There's work put into it. And Brotherhood is a fantastic series. Like, I think the original is a fantastic series, but Brotherhood fixes a lot of the problems while still telling ostensibly the same story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
it focuses on a pretty broad and unique cast of characters, and they all have their own plots, and they all get resolved, and it's all...
The characters and setting and tone... situations are all very relatable to Western audiences too, since it's set in a pseudo Western Europe.
Yes. And, you empathize with pretty much all of the villains too, which is something that anime does more often than anything else, I think. They kind of make the villains really relatable.
Yes.
And this is available on, Crunchyroll and Hulu, I believe.
I think Funimation might have the...
the OVA. Funimation has the movie.
Oh, right. Yes. Okay.
Watch the series on Crunchy.
Yes.
So that's one that I would recommend. And do you have one that you want to get? And after that, I'll do one deep dive one per each, like short deep cuts, I guess. But before that, do you have any, like...
there's actually a currently airing series by the author of Full Metal Alchemist called Silver Spoon.
I haven't heard of this.
It is on Crunchyroll, and it is... the author of Full Metal Alchemist is went to an agricultural school. And that's the field they worked in. So this Silver Spoon is actually about agricultural school and that field. And while that doesn't sound like something that's interesting at all, it actually really is. And it's quite good. It's not Full Metal Alchemist, and it's not in that style or tone at all, but it still feels like something from the same author. And if you want to watch something currently airing, I highly recommend that.
One other thing that is, I think, good to watch for non-anime fans is Hajime no Ippo, Fighting Spirit, which is a boxing show.
Agreed.
It takes influence from Rocky, basically. It's about this, you know, young guy who's a pretty simple guy, but he decides to get into boxing. And, you know the regular sports movie plot. It's that, but, you know, it's pretty fantastic. Great characters, great fighting. It's pretty fantastic. And that's one is on Crunchyroll as well. So before we close it off, let's do a deep cut briefly each, like some really niche show that you love that you would like to recommend. Attack on Titan is also, it's a good entry level anime, I would say. Kind of similar feeling to Full Metal Alchemist. Again, it takes place in like fantasy World War I era Germany-ish, right?
Yeah, kind of like that.
I'm not a huge fan of the show, but I think it's a pretty decent show, and it's pretty popular, so if you get into that now... and
I have my issues with it, but I still enjoyed it.
Yeah, and it's... You can watch that on several services, and like the advantage of watching that now would be that it's an ongoing show, so you can participate in the community, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
As opposed to Full Metal. Okay, so give me a deep cut.
Deep cut. I really enjoyed, let's see. Let me look at my library here for a second, because it's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't. Rin.
Oh my god. Rin, Memories of Mnemosyne, right?
Daughters of Mnemosyne, yes.
Daughters of Mnemosyne. That is some fucked up shit. Yes, I love that.
It is kind of a, it's a shorter series, more of a mini-series with longer episodes, but fewer in number.
Mm-hmm.
And
this show is not for the lighthearted.
No,
say that.
No, it is incredibly dark.
Yeah.
It is about this woman, Rin, who is she's basically unable to die. Like, she can be sucked through a jet plane engine and still regenerate, which mm-hmm. is something I'm pretty sure that happens in one of the episodes.
Yes, it does.
And she works with her bisexual partner slash assistant as kind of like a supernatural detective
mm-hmm.
problem solver. And it takes place over a number of years to tell their story.
Several decades, I believe.
Yes. But I honestly don't know how much I can describe it more. Hmm. Without yeah. spoiling it.
There is some mythological aspect to it that it kind of combines Norse mythology and Christian mythology to some extent. And there are some supernatural elements. The series is super grim and heartbreaking. And also very explicit both in its violence and sexuality. And I think it's just fantastic, though, because of the imagery, the way it's executed, and the way it pulls on your heartstrings is just, like, unparalleled. I would put that in my top five, probably.
Agree. It's the animation is outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not just the fluid animation, but the character designs.
Yeah. So, a deep cut from me. I would have gone... I was thinking of going for that. So I'm kind of Shrek'd here. Okay. Samurai Flamenco.
Agree. That is really good.
I don't know how to describe this show. It is on Crunchyroll, but basically...
Samurai Flamenco is kind of a deconstruction of the I want to be a superhero genre.
Yes. It is both a deconstruction and a reconstruction, and then a deconstruction again, and it is so bizarre. So, the Japanese have the Sentai genre, which is what gave birth to Power Rangers here in the West. And it is based on that and how this character idolizes that and wants to become a superhero like that. It kind of starts off like Kick-Ass, but then the show ramps up. And normally when we say a show ramps up, you know, it means that, you know, things escalate, they get more interesting faster, right?
It makes Kick-Ass look like a lighthearted family comedy, but without, like, devolving into grotesqueries.
Yes, but also, like, the scales get shifted in such a manner that, let's say you're watching Toy Story, right? But then one of the toys gets involved in a plot to assassinate JFK. And turns out JFK was an alien from, like, a dimension, a galaxy beyond ours. And turns out that galaxy was actually in the Matrix. Like, so, like, this is the level of escalation I'm talking about here, right? And yep. You know what I'm saying. And this show, like, it gets some time to get started up. And it's definitely not for everyone because it's just, like, the tone is intentionally incredibly inconsistent, right?
Yes. Both Rin and Samurai Flamenco, I should have prefaced this by saying,
these are deep cuts.
Yeah. Watch these at your own risk and on your own volition. We take no responsibility for anything that may happen from watching either of these shows.
Yes, and this
please,
one is
please direct all angry hate mail to EdenCooperments@gmail.com.
Samurai Flamenco isn't necessarily, like, super grimdark, though it does have moments of extreme levity, but it's just
It balances that out with, like, and it's not even, like, super gory or cruel. It is very shocking.
Yes.
When it chooses to be.
Because a character, like, the show acts incredibly lighthearted, like a comedy show for a while, and then just kills off one of the main characters. It's, like, really bizarre. Again, the tone is incredibly inconsistent, but it is intentionally so. And if you stick with it a little bit, I think it was episode 8 where the other shoe drops. And yeah, you'll see what I mean. Because it's, you know, yeah, it's basically, think of it as Kick-Ass, but then things go interesting.
Yeah, I also highly recommend that one. I really enjoyed it, but like he said, it's not something everyone will enjoy. It is potentially very polarizing.
Yeah. So that's all, I guess, for this week, unless you have anything else that you want to add here, Colin?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
All right, so we had a good time. Hope you enjoyed this, and thank you for listening.